Hello, it's Wednesday 17th of February. I'm Hannah Pearson from Per Anderson. On this week's show, we'll be talking all things travel and tourism in the Maldives with Ruth Franklin, co-founder of Secret Paradise Maldives.
Yes, 7 months after Maldives reopened its borders, how has this stunning archipelago nation readjusted to inbound tourism? And what valuable lessons have been learned? Let's find out over the next 30 minutes. This is the Southeast Asia Travel Show.
Hello, wherever you are in the world, and thanks for listening in. So today, it's our great pleasure to welcome Ruth Franklin, who joins us from the beautiful Maldives. Hi, Ruth, and welcome to the Southeast Asia Travel Show. How are you today, and what's the view from your window?
Hi, guys. I'm very well, thank you. You'll be very disappointed to hear. I look out over one of the main roads in Hulamali, which is part of the capital. But if I lean to the right and tilt my head, I can just about see the beach and the ocean.
That'll do then. Okay, that doesn't make us too jealous. So Ruth, let's hear a little bit about you. So you went from a store manager in the UK to co-founder of Secret Paradise Maldives, living in the Maldives. How did that happen?
I think I was in the right place at the right time, if I'm very honest. I'd been visiting the Maldives for many years. I'd been introduced to scuba diving, and then my dive buddy Romney introduced me to the Maldives, and I kept coming back maybe twice, three times a year. Practically, I was just spending my earnings on travelling to and from the Maldives. And I came out for a period of time to do my dive master. I was fortunate in that I joined my retail career at a time where it said in my contract, after 25 years service, you get 1 year with 12 weeks paid holiday. So I took that opportunity to spend most of that time in the Maldives, and a chance meeting over coffee on the beach with a local businessman in 2012 led to a conversation about why tourists would want to stay and travel around local islands in the Maldives, because up until 2011, apart from a very small period of time, tourists, if they visited, would be staying on resort islands or travelling around on what we term as liverboards, but safari vessels. And so we debated this on two separate occasions over coffee. I thought nothing more of the conversation. I headed back to the UK, went back to my job. And then about 6 weeks later, I had a call asking me if I would be interested in starting a business. So I guess I thought, what's the worst case scenario? I either go out to the Maldives, it doesn't turn out well, and I end up coming back to the UK and probably slipping back into retail, or I'd be sat in my rocking chair in years to come going, what if I had gone to the Maldives, what would have happened?
So tell us a little bit about Secret Paradise Maldives. You focus on local island tourism, which to a lot of our listeners may not be that apparent, that this is something that can be done in the Maldives. Can you tell us a little bit more about how you've developed that concept?
Yep, sure. In a nutshell, Secret Paradise is about exploring the Maldives beyond the beach, or the well-known vision, as you've just said there, Gary, in terms of white sands, blue water, luxury resorts, water villas over the water. It's about discovering off-the-beaten-path locations. It's about connecting with local communities, with the culture and with the environment. So when we started back in 2012, the opportunity, as I've previously mentioned, for tourists to stay on local islands had only recently come into being. So the challenge for us was not just about promoting a new brand, a new business, a new product. It was also about educating the consumer as well as the travel industry. People were definitely not aware then that there was this alternative style of Maldives holiday. And whilst that awareness has certainly grown over the last 10 years, as you mentioned, there's still a very wide number of people that don't appreciate that there's this option to stay on a locally inhabited island in a guest house property and experience everything that the Maldives has to offer, but perhaps at a more affordable price. So when we started our journey, there were only 23 registered guest houses in the Maldives. And now there are 349 approved properties across 52 islands. But prior to COVID, there were actually over 500 registered properties, and they accounted for 20% of the bed capacity here in the Maldives. So initially, properties were small, 6 to 8 bedrooms, probably converted from local homes into what we would perhaps envisage as a bed and breakfast style property. But now guest houses are purpose built and they include boutique style properties and what probably can also be considered as island hotels equipped with sea view balconies, swimming pools, spas and restaurants. But there are some compromises to staying local, and those need to be taken into consideration. So the first of those is that on local islands, because the Maldives is a Muslim country, no alcohol is available. Secondly, there are dedicated tourist beaches. And when we first started business, not every single local island had a dedicated tourist beach. And now it's very much par for the course. And thirdly, it's about dressing appropriately. So tourists need to be aware that it's not as relaxed on local islands in terms of standard of dress. And as long as you are dressed appropriately and you're covered appropriately, then still T-shirts and shorts go. But bikinis are for the bikini tourist beaches or for when you're out on a boat in the ocean. But certainly, local tourism has opened up the Maldives from a more affordable point of view. And it's also opened up the Maldives to people who, when they travel, want to experience a country. So they want to get under the skin of a country and learn about its history, meet people, get an understanding of traditions and culture. And staying on a local island and certainly traveling with Secret Paradise allows people to be able to do that.
So just as a bit of background for listeners, I mean, I'm lucky enough to have been to the Maldives, but it was about 10 years ago, so I thought I'd refresh with a few statistics. Actually, the Maldives spans 1,192 islands in the Indian Ocean. It's a total area of 90,000 square kilometres, but only 298 square kilometres is actually dry land. Now, these islands are a double chain of 26 atolls, and they span the equator.
So Ruth, who are Secret Paradise Maldives' customers? You know, are they from the UK? Are they from other countries? Are they Muslim tourists maybe because it's easier for them to stay there? Who are your customers or who were they pre-COVID, I suppose?
We're quite fortunate in that we do have a wide destination and customer profile. So we have customers or guests that are coming long haul, and they'll be from Scandinavia, the UK, US, Australia, Canada. And then we have those that will be coming short haul, so 3 or 4 night stays, of which 30% of our business would be from Southeast Asia, so particularly the Philippines, Singapore, Malaysia. And in 2019, Southeast Asia arrivals accounted for 5% of the arrivals into the Maldives. So even though it's a hop, skip and a jump, it's still not a large proportion of travellers that are entering. And then when you dive a bit deeper into our numbers, we also have a very broad age range. So we have students who are travelling either in their gap year, are travelling as a group. And then we have those that are travelling before they settle down and start a family. And then we have the other end of the spectrum where we have people who have retired and are now having their travel moment in time. And I think we benefit from the fact that we are the Maldives. So it's a bucket list destination. It's a destination that people aspire to travel to. And nowadays, if you're traveling around Asia and you're in Sri Lanka or you're in India, for example, it's very easy pre-COVID to have jumped onto a flight and come over to the Maldives for 2 or 3 nights. It might not be a long stay. certainly if you're traveling around this particular location of the world, the Maldives would be generally on people's tick lists of we need to get there.
Now, we hear a lot across the industry about sustainability, but sustainability is incredibly important in the Maldives because of the nature of its geography. It is pretty vulnerable to climate change. And your company is very aware and actually actively promotes sustainability. Can you tell us a bit more about what you do? And is that a driving factor when you're attracting your clients?
Yes, sustainability is really important to us, Gary. So when we started, it was about employing local. It was about staying local. It was about using local services. And as we have grown, that has developed into education. So whether that's education of our team, of our guests, of local communities, it's been about working with local NGOs to protect the environment and support local initiatives. And in turn, that has then given us the opportunity to ensure our guests have the opportunity to give back, which may be getting involved in a beach clean. It may be about working on a coral nursery in terms of checking it, reporting data, or even planting coral. It could be about understanding why seagrass and mangroves are important to island nations such as the Maldives.
So do you see it post-COVID becoming more of a driving factor, or even now, are you seeing more customers taking sustainability more seriously? That's one of the kind of driving factors behind them booking with you guys to the Maldives as opposed to booking to like a big resort?
I do believe the events of 2020, together with the focus on the climate crisis, will have made many people stop and think about their travel choices. But I also feel there is still an educational requirement. People may consider how they travel in relation to protecting the environment, but not everyone actually understands the wider meaning of sustainability, which actually sustainable tourism is driven by the stakeholders of a destination. And as you mentioned at the beginning of this question, Gary, you know, the Maldives does have to rely on sustainability or actions of sustainability to ensure that it has a future. So I think sustainable tourism has gathered momentum over the past year. And I think that there's been far more media coverage. You know, there's been a lot of prediction articles that have mentioned sustainable tourism and a lot of travel publications that have focused on responsible tourism, ecotourism, sustainable tourism. So therefore, on that basis, I think the demand can only grow further. But I also think that destinations worldwide, not just necessarily the Maldives, have got to start to think long and hard about the actions that they are taking and the actions that they are promoting to encourage guests to travel with an understanding that they are traveling to a sustainable environment and they're staying in a property that upholds sustainable values, for example. So people booking with Secret Paradise are twofold. We do have the traveller who has seeked us out because of what we provide, and we perhaps further tailor-make itineraries to ensure that they are ticking all the boxes that they want to achieve when they're in the Maldives, as well as being able to have completed a sustainable holiday. But we also have the traveller that contacts us because they want a cultural experience. They want to see another side of the Maldives. And that may be about combining a resort stay with a Secret Paradise tour. And I think some of those type of travellers don't actually understand that they're being a responsible or a sustainable traveller. It's just that they want to experience something different. They want to experience a culture. They want to be in an environment that's slightly different to the norm for them, perhaps. So I think this is where it comes back to that educational piece, in that travellers, there are those travellers that know that they want to be responsible and sustainable. And there are those travellers that actually do want to be responsible and sustainable, but don't actually understand that the choices they're making are putting them in that category.
Now, we'll come to the reopening in a few moments, because Maldives is being sort of held up as a bit of a case study of a country that can reopen quite successfully. But let's go back to 2020 and before the reopening. So it was, for the Maldives, it was a kind of a year in three parts. So you had the first part of the year where you were open. I'm presuming the business was quite good. And then obviously you had the closure. At the beginning of 2020, was business growing quite fast? Were you looking forward to a positive year?
Yes, we were. So the Maldives in general had a very successful 2019 and was looking to have a super boosted 2020. And we were in exactly the same position. So in 2019, we had hit being a seven-digit revenue business. And so for us, 2020 was going to be absolutely awesome. And in terms of January, February, we were getting a good level of business. We were still had bookings on the books for March and April. And then at the end of February, beginning of March, that's when the change happened. And I think for a lot of people, we sat talking about, okay, so we're not going to get this market and this may be changed. Not initially expecting the borders to be fully closed, and also certainly not expecting that 12 months on, we would still be in a very similar position in terms of the situation as far as travel is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody, no one back then, did we? You didn't think that we would still be sat here in February 2021 still talking about COVID. So the Maldives, its first phase of reopening was the 15th of July, right?
That's right, yes.
So was that something that was welcomed by locals?
In a country reliant on tourism to survive and with a large proportion of the population impacted by tourism directly or indirectly, I think for the vast majority of Maldivians, it was welcomed. It was something that needed to be done in order to survive, I guess.
And was it all the hotels or it was just selected hotels? How did the opening first work?
So I think this is where the government and the tourism bodies that were all involved in the strategy for reopening played the right part, in that it was a phased reopening. So initially, resorts were allowed to open, and then liveaboards were able to operate. And then it wasn't until much later down the line that guest houses on local islands could operate. So we were well into quarter four by the time that local islands were open to tourists. And during that period of time, there has been changes made. So the original plan hasn't been stuck to. So if changes have needed to be made, there's been flexibility within that strategy to take into account changes with COVID and what's happening in a more worldwide perspective.
So the situation as it is now, when Maldives reopened in July, there was no requirement for a clean test. Is that correct? But that was added later. Is that one of the sort of health and safety precautions that, as you said, as they've been a bit flexible and they've adapted as the country has gone along?
Yes, that's correct. So when we reopened, PCR tests were not a mandatory requirement prior to arrival. However, this decision was changed in August, and it was definitely the right decision to make. It was probably a hard decision. I think any decisions that any government or tourism body is having to make are difficult decisions at this moment in time. And I'm sure many of us would not like to be in those seats. But certainly in terms of the PCR test needed to happen. I think also because the Maldives was the first tourism destination to open, there was an aspect of, do we have PCR? Don't we have PCR? And now following that, it's normal to expect to have a PCR test before you travel, before you even get on your flight. So I think that's where the turning point perhaps came in terms of it being an acceptance as opposed to it being detrimental to people arriving into the Maldives.
And are people tested during their stay, or is it just before they arrive?
If you're staying on a resort, some resorts have implemented their own PCR testing scheme. So you may arrive with a negative PCR test, but the resort will also expect you to PCR test on arrival at the resort. And once you get a negative test result at the resort within 24 hours, you're then allowed to roam freely around the resort. And then there are also resorts that may ask for a test partway through a stay, particularly if you're doing a long stay, and even test upon departure. From a mandatory point of view, guests that stay on local islands are required to have a PCR test prior to departure. And that's about protecting the local communities and also minimising the risk of spread.
And have you seen many cases that have been kind of transmitted from tourists to locals? Or has the Maldives not experienced so much of that, do you know?
The statistics are broken down so that we can see the level of cases within Greater Mali and the level of cases in resorts, inhabited islands, and in islands that are under construction. But as I say, we can't, at a general level, see the if there's an impact in terms of tourism.
So if we look back, as we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's 7 months now since Maldives reopened. If you look back across that period, I mean, what do you think have been some of the key learnings that the Maldives has gained from this and that other destinations could perhaps adopt in future?
I think there are three key learnings, and we've probably touched on each of those in the conversation so far. From my point of view, it is about not being afraid to make changes. So we talked about the PCR not being mandatory on arrival and those changes being made. Likewise, restrictions in Greater Mali have changed over a period of time. And I think it's important that destinations, governments, tourism authorities shouldn't be afraid of making those changes, providing they are either being proactive or they are being or they're responding to something that has happened that needs to be addressed appropriately. I think secondly, it's about testing. For the Maldives, it's obviously far more simpler logistically to be able to do that in terms of people coming into the country from an arrival point and then when they go to their designated resort island or local island. But I think in terms of testing is definitely key to minimising the risk and having an awareness that if there's a positive case, that it can be reacted to and the appropriate actions can be taken in order to limit the risk of everybody else on that particular island or in that particular hotel. And then I think the third thing was the phased opening. So properties had to have approval before they could again operate and accept tourists. And then, as I mentioned, there was this phased opening of resorts, then local islands, which again was another change that the government took the decision to make. So there was a date set for local islands to reopen and welcome tourists. And that was put back on more than one occasion to ensure that the time was right and the challenges and the processes had been overcome and the processes were in place in order to be able to welcome tourists in a safe way and to ensure that communities were also in a safe position.
That's great. And so what's happening in terms of vaccinations in the Maldives? Because from here, it looks like they are advancing pretty quickly. Where do tourism workers fall in this program?
Vaccination started on the 1st of February and they were led by the president and other members of the administration. And as with other countries, the focus was on frontline workers and high-risk categories. But really pleased to say that tourism fell into frontline workers. And on the 4th of February, Tourism Employee Programme was launched with an aim of vaccinating 10,000 tourism employees. So currently, there are 56 centres across the Maldives implementing vaccination. 8 of those are in Mali. Just over 50,000 individuals up until last night had been vaccinated. And out of that 50,000, 78% of it is individuals that have been vaccinated here in Mali, which is definitely the right focus given the dense population here in the Greater Mali. And really pleased to say that a couple of our guides have had their vaccinations because they're working at the airport and receiving guests.
Now, one of the things that Maldives has kind of promoted itself since it reopened is this kind of safe haven. As you've mentioned, all these protocols have been put in place. So do you think that vaccine tourism might become a thing? Is it something that the Maldives might promote?
The tourism minister has highlighted that vaccine tourism would be explored, but for the moment, the priority was getting 100% of the population vaccinated. So, you know, potentially for the future could be an avenue.
So we've just talked a lot about what happened in 2020. Obviously, we're halfway through the second month of 2021 already. What do you think's in store for the Maldives this year, Ruth? It set this target of 1.5 million pax. Do you think that's achievable?
I don't think it's impossible, especially with vaccinations starting worldwide. There are, however, key markets that will need to be free to travel again, such as UK and Europe, because they definitely impact the arrival numbers. I also think that seasonal patterns are very likely to change, and I would envisage that months that would usually be deemed as low season, so May to July, could potentially see increases dependent on when people around the world have the opportunity to travel. But having said that, there's quite a lot in store for the Maldives in general. There's 18 new resorts planned to open, a mix of local and international brands. Earlier this year, the Maldives virtual tour was launched, which provides 2,360-degree tours of 150 islands, which, while people are at home, gives them the opportunity to explore the Maldives in a completely new digital way. I think the Maldives will also see increased duration of stay, whether that's through workcations or through general holidays. Currently, the average number of nights is standing at 9.1. Previous to COVID, it was at 6.3. So definitely longer stays already in place. Something that's interestingly coming to the Maldives is skydiving. So perfect for thrill seekers out there. So Skydive Maldives, in partnership with Candima Resort, have literally just launched a new skydiving program. So having done skydiving myself, I think there's a certain category of traveller that will most definitely appeal to. And then also laws have been changed recently, which allow resorts to lease rooms or villas to other parties for extended periods. So resorts are offering almost a residence ownership programme, which again, I think, ties into the extended stays. So plenty on the agenda, and 2022 is the golden jubilee year for the Maldives. So I'm sure there's a lot more that travellers can look forward to here.
Well, it's been fascinating talking to you, Ruth. These have been some great insights, and it's been really interesting to learn more and more about the experiences that you've had since COVID hit and the reopening. So we got to ask you, a lot of our listeners will be pretty envious of you living and working in the Maldives, but you personally, where do you crave to visit next?
I have to be honest and say that since arriving in the Maldives, I do travel hardly anywhere outside of the Maldives because for me, there's so much still to explore here. But if I were able to travel anywhere in the world, I do have a desire to get to Cuba. It's somewhere that was on my list that I have never got to as yet. So Cuba But I would also love to get back to Kathmandu and also New York. So those are my top three destinations, I guess.
Nice, nice pick of destinations. That brings us to the end of this week's Maldives edition of the show. We hope you enjoyed the podcast, and don't forget to send us your thoughts and comments on what we discussed with Ruth or anything we missed out. You can drop us an email at hello@theseasiatravelshow.com or message us on our LinkedIn page at the Southeast Asia Travel Show or Twitter at SEA Travel Show.
Yeah, meanwhile, you can catch up with the Southeast Asia Travel Show's full back catalogue on our website, www.theseasiatravelshow.com, or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Podchaser, Castbox, Podcast Addict, and Stitcher. Just search for the Southeast Asia Travel Show on each app. And if you do listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please take the time to rate and review us, as that helps other people to find the show.
Please do. That's a wrap for this week, and we're off to look at flight prices to the Maldives. And we look forward to talking Southeast Asian travel and tourism again with you very soon.
Yeah, thanks, Ruth.
Thank you, guys.